The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Thanks for joining us on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. And for the next half hour, we will be talking about planning for, building toward financial independence in retirement. That's what it's about. You've worked hard and you certainly want to grow whatever it is you have saved. And if you haven't saved, well, it's time to get started. And that's what we'll be talking about today. You can reach out to Josh and the Aptus team to understand answers to the volatility that is out there, reactions, and have a plan, a blueprint, if you will, for the volatility in our market now. We have high inflation. We have rising interest rates. It's a compilation of market conditions we haven't seen in almost four decades. So get answers from a professional, from a fiduciary, someone who is legally obligated to do what is best for you. Set up your free consultation with no obligation at all by calling the Aptus office at 614-917-1040. You can also set up your appointment online by going to their website at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. So here's a story, Josh, that caught my eye. An NBA player named Antoine Walker. The headline says he blew $108 million in career earnings by wanting to be like Jay-Z, Puff Daddy, and other rappers. So I find it hard to believe anybody could go bankrupt after signing a $108 million contract. But I do occasionally see headlines about lottery winners who go bankrupt. And is that a common story for people who come into sudden, almost incomprehensible amounts of money?
It's just absolutely common.
Really?
All the time. Yeah. And one thing I'd really like in that article to read, if they had it, which they don't, is what he bought, because that's the most fun thing to read.
Yeah, it is.
I encourage everybody to go online and look up what, you know, Nicolas Cage went bankrupt at one point, or at least darn near. Mm-hmm. Look up what he purchased, and it's just fun to read. I mean, you know, $350,000 dinosaur bones. The list just goes on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
I think the phenomenon here is when you think of the number $108 million, how could I possibly spend $108 million? Now, also think about if someone grew up with no money and now they have $108 million, there's no way I could pour enough water out of that bucket to make it go empty, right?
Wouldn't think so.
Other than you can. And, you know, Shaq actually talks openly about this. He said the first time he got money in his pocket, he spent like $2 million in the first weekend of his bonus. And after taxes, his bonus was actually only like $1.8 million. So he was like $200,000 in the hole. Because, you know, you're buying houses for your friends and family. You're buying multiple cars in one day. The list just goes on and on. And you know, unfortunately, I've had the pleasure of working with some lottery winners, but unfortunately, I've seen their spending habits. And, you know, I can help you direct the money and I can even, you know, spit some wisdom at you. But ultimately, it's your discipline that's going to keep you on the straight and narrow. And unfortunately, every lottery winner I've ever had has within a period of 3 years spent every nickel they won in the lottery.
Wow. Now, see, when I saw this headline, I thought, okay, what happened here is he couldn't have possibly had anybody in his life who was putting a check on spending I can't even fathom. It's hard for me to believe that if you spent $108 million, you wouldn't be in the course of obviously wasting some of that money, acquiring assets that it would at least be worth something on the back end. But I know you. I'm a client of Aptus, and I know your strategies are very, very sound. So I'm surprised to hear that you've had lottery winners who, what, they just didn't follow what you told them, didn't want to set money aside, didn't want to keep it away from where they could get their hands on it.
Yeah, people who haven't kind of grown into the money, meaning that, you know, it's taken them a long time, you know, pain, sweat, tears mm-hmm. to get the money that they have, where they become very protective of it. When it's a flash in the pan, they assume that that's the way that money is made. It's made by a flash in the pan. And you can also look this up. Look up, you know, Dave Ramsey did a lot of research recently out of his organization about what the average millionaire looks like. And I hate to break the news for everybody who's cynical. They did not get it overnight. They didn't inherit it. It was not given to them. It was built up over a long time of discipline savings, and logical investing strategies. So when you look at folks like this or the lottery winners that I'm talking about, a lot of times where the money goes, you know, they start with $1 million and somebody comes up to them and says, you know, hey, I got this really good idea for a pizza shop
mm-hmm.
and it's just going to take $400,000 to get it set up. And this person's never run a pizza shop before. They might not even know how to make pizza. They just like pizza. So it sounds like, okay, hey, my buddy's got a bunch of money now. So I'm going to go ask him for money to start this pizza shop because I hate my job. And then the $400,000's gone, poof, in a matter of 18 months. Or, you know, my other friend's got this really good idea. He knows a lot about this thing. And he told me that we can start doing this. Well, there's another $200,000. And then, you know, I've always wanted, and this is a good part of it, so I'm not knocking this. You know, my parents have helped me out dramatically, so I'm going to pay off their house mm-hmm. or do whatever. And that's all good stuff. But by the time we pay taxes, the three items that I just said, you're broke. You're all out of money. So what should you have done with it? First, I always advocate having some fun. So if you get $1 million, take $100,000 of it, go buy something stupid. Whatever it is, you got a windfall, enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like getting an A on your report card and saying, well, I didn't get an A+, so I suck. I mean, that's just foolish, right?
Yeah.
If you do something fun, then pay your taxes, because I've seen people go upside down on taxes too. Then do some really boring, logical things that are going to make a difference in your life for the rest of your life. And then if you want to try one of these crazy ideas, do it with maybe like 5 or 10%. Protect yourself from yourself. Unfortunately, that's not what usually happens.
No, it's not. And I hearken back to years ago, I was sent to cover a bankruptcy hearing in the state of Ohio. Mike Tyson had purchased a property in Ohio, and he was in arrears on it. In the course of that bankruptcy hearing, they were showing him clearly a very high-end real estate brochure for a multi-million dollar estate somewhere in Connecticut. And they handed him the brochure, and he's looking at the brochure and all the rooms and all the ornate furnishings. And at one point in time, it like a light went on in his head, and he asked the judge, is this my place? Well, they obviously were showing him the brochure because it was his place, and they were inquiring about the taxes on it or the debt on it. And that made an impression on me that you can have so much money. And he made $59 million in 1 year at the height of his career. It was all gone by the time he had this bankruptcy hearing. Is that you could purchase a place that it was probably in the double figure millions of dollars, and he wasn't even aware that he owned it. There was like a light bulb moment. Oh, wait, is this the house that I own? Because he never stayed there. He owned a house worth more than $10 million. He never spent a night there. I'm sure that's an extreme case, but people can get sucked into things that seem like, oh, well, what's the harm? I've got plenty of money. Well, then one day you wake up and you don't have plenty of money.
Well, he's a perfect example. I mean, he had a tiger.
Yeah.
And I heard somewhere, this isn't verified, that he was spending like $100,000 a month on feed, bird seed for his flipping pigeons. So, I mean, if I'm making $59 million a year, does it matter? No, except for that. You don't own a company that generates $59 million a year every single year. You have a finite window of boxing, mm-hmm. right? And I think sometimes that's what happens is people, whether you're a football player, you're a lottery winner, whatever it is, I'm making $10 million a year. Yeah, but for a finite window. So you can't spend, it's different for you. If you're working at Nationwide Financial, you know, here in Columbus, and you're making $100,000 a year and you save 15% of your income for your whole career, you're going to retire just fine. If you're making $10 million a year for 5 years and you save 15% of your income, you're not going to be just fine for the rest of your life because you're used to living on $8.5 million. And $1.5 million multiplied by 4 or 5 years doesn't equate to $8.5 million for the rest of your life. So there's only one thing worse than being broke, And that's being broke and being really rich and then being really broke. Because now you know what rich looked like. And it's not a good fall from grace.
No, it certainly is not. And that's what we want to prevent. That is what, of course, Josh and his team are hoping to help you avoid. A free consultation awaits you by calling the office and setting up your appointment. Aptus is located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. Very easy to get to. You can make your consultation for your no-obligation free consultation by calling the office, 614-917-1040, or by making your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Now, those insane amounts of money, flash, windfalls are not something that most people have to blow. But one way that people can get caught off guard, Josh, is by a market condition that they did not see coming, because for the longest time, we were in a situation where, you know, if you owned an index fund, you were going to get a pretty good return if you just left your money alone in the stock market. Everybody was used to a 20-year period where interest rates were very low. Now we are in a position in the last 2 years where people are dealing, a lot of them for the first time in their life, challenging situations to grow their retirement nest egg, and they have to make better decisions. They have to have somebody on the case. That's what you guys specialize in. How challenging have the past 2 years been for you in terms of dealing with your clients and, most importantly, adjusting to, anticipating, and reacting to these market conditions that have resulted in high inflation, higher interest rates, and greater volatility?
Yeah, volatility is really the killer for investors. I think inherently as investors, we all know that if we leave the money in, let's just use the market as a broad brushstroke, if we leave the money in the market for the next 20 years, we know we're going to have a lot more money 20 years from now than we do now. However, as much as we'd like to think that we can just put the horse blinders on and ignore everything that's happening, not even open the envelopes when they come in the mail, I think if we're being honest with ourselves, we know we all do to some capacity look at that. And even if we're not looking at our own stuff, just we all watch the news. And when you watch the news and you hear all this tumultuous stuff, it's going to be a recession, depression, stock market's going to go to, you know, going to go down to zero. We start getting a lot of anxiety. And, you know, unfortunately, what we've been fed as clients, in my opinion, is two things that aren't necessarily the best ways to conquer that. Way number one is, well, just buy and hold and do exactly what I just said. Just close your eyes and 20 years later, open your eyes back up and you'll be great. And that's true if we can actually do it. But there's something called the behavior gap, investor behavior gap. And this has been proven time and time again that there is a significant decline in your rate of return just by the decisions that you make on your own. So even if the market averages 7% over the next, you know, per year over the next 20 years, the average investor in the United States is going to average like 3. Because they're going to pull out at the wrong time and put the money back in. The other way is, well, I'm working with a financial advisor, and I'll use this as an example of somebody that I talked to literally this morning. He said, my financial advisor's, you know, he's pretty good. Nice guy. I've been with him for a number of years. We get together every 6 months. And I go, well, what does that meeting look like? Well, he asks me my opinion on the investments. He gives me his opinion. And then we go with basically my opinion and he moves stuff around. Well, how does that meeting occur? Well, when I call him. So your super strategic plan is whenever you call your person, you go meet with your person, and then that person moves some stuff around so it looks like they're doing something, which may or may not be at a really good time.
And moves it around according to the client's
kind of
direction?
Okay. Yeah. So what ends up happening in that scenario? Well, fear and greed are your financial planners. Because what happened with this particular person is, you know, he thought he was a moderate investor. That's the way he feels. He feels like, I don't like volatility that much. Well, then in 2001, 2002, the market starts going crazy. 2001, excuse me. And in 2001, he goes, well, I mean, this thing just keeps on shooting up. I mean, I'm a moderate investor, but I hear everybody making 20%. I'm making 12. So in 2021, let's go.
Yeah.
And the advisor says, okay. And then 2022 hits and he's down 20%. He goes, I don't think I'm an aggressive investor anymore. Has another meeting. I think we should pull back the reins. Okay. So what did we just do? We bought high and sold low. That's not a strategy.
No.
So how should it be handled? It should be handled that you're still having meetings consistently with your advisor, but there should be discretionary authority given to your advisor to make changes when they see fit to all of their clients' accounts. And that might not be at the time that you think makes the most sense. So when we were pulling back the reins in 2021, and then, you know, 2021 had a really good run at the end of the year, and you look like a moron, and all your clients are saying, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? And we're saying, the numbers, I see what you're seeing as far as rates of return, but the risk metric that you're assuming for that, it's just not going to continue. And then 2022 hits and, oh, now I'm smart again.
Right.
So you have to start this relationship with client and advisor of one of long duration, which is why we use the blueprint process to show exactly what we do so that clients give us the ability to actually help them by knowing that this is a long-term process that they're bought into. If we would do our blueprint process in one meeting, we would be doing our clients a disservice because we wouldn't have them at a level of understanding to stick with the plan. And then when 2022 hit, well, thanks for paying us, but you paid us for nothing because you pulled all your money out and it did what it did.
Yeah. I mean, let me take people behind the scenes a little bit. Like, my wife and I are clients at Aptus. And for us, if anybody asked me, like, well, what do you have now that you didn't have before? Number one, I would say peace of mind. The reason why we have peace of mind is because I understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that's, to me, priceless, because I had a fear that, okay, if we're managing this on our own, we're reacting to headlines. We're not proactive, we're reactive. And I wanted to find someone who is monitoring market conditions and volatility and scanning the financial horizon for danger out there to help me avoid that danger before I'm trying to react to it. So I would highly recommend you get that free consultation with Josh and his team. Learn about them, learn about their process. They'll learn about you too. I mean, it's a two-way street. You have to be a fit. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can set up your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And one of those things that might be out there on the horizon, this word that everybody's scared of, is a recession. And we hear all these forecasts about, oh, the recession, it's doom and gloom. Or no, it's going to be fine. We're going to have a soft landing here. So Bank of America, a name everybody knows, they submitted to an interview, I guess, with someone here from, I think, Yahoo Finance. And the headline reads, Bank of America shares 12 charts that show that the economy is about to enter a full-blown recession. Now, I'm not saying this is Bank of America's position. This is the position of this particular news organization that is framing it through that prism. But here are some of the things that they say are warning signs. A decline in manufacturing activity. A decline in manufacturing often coincides with lower earnings. Global earnings model suggests imminent decline. Steepening yield curve often precedes a recession. Price of oil, job market, on and on and on and on and on. What I'm interested in here is how much of what you do is keeping your eyes open to market conditions before those market conditions become headline on the first page of the Wall Street Journal. And that is really, I think, what a person gets when they get a fiduciary, because a fiduciary is what you are and what some financial planners are, where you are obligated to do what is best for the client. You're not putting them in investments because, oh, hey, I get paid X percent commission on this investment and it's more than the other one, so I'm going to put them in the one with the highest commission.
Yeah, all of that type of research goes very significantly into the recommendations that we end up doing and how we manage money. And it's definitely an interpretation game. It's math and science and interpretation and all the things in between. Because, you know, I'm looking at an article right here, same time period from CNN, that says banking crisis will tilt into a mild recession.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is the interpretation of the recent Fed meeting where the Fed said, you know, we have a very small window to come in for a soft landing. And we use all this creative, you know, linguistics to try and wordsmith our way into whatever we're trying to pitch.
Yeah, I mean, you can find a headline to pretty much tell you whatever you want to hear.
Right? And now we have algorithms that as soon as you find the one you like and you read it for a longer period of time, you just get force-fed more of the ones that you like, right? So it ends up being this echo chamber of what you want to hear. And that can be very dangerous, particularly on the gloom and doom side. Because if you read one gloom and doom article and they start force-feeding it to them, by the end of the night, you've had four bourbons and you're like, it's all coming to an end, right?
Yeah. Get me out of the market. I want all my money. I'm putting it under my mattress. Yeah, you're right. The algorithms can be dangerous. I notice even on social media that, boy, I'm reading every one of these stories. Wow, I'm retweeting every one of these stories. And I have the cognitive awareness, like, wait a minute, they figured out what appeals to me, and they're feeding me what they think I like, and they're basing that on what I've shown I like.
And if there's one thing that rises to the top with humans, I mean, not to dive too deep into this, but, you know, we're not lions and tigers, so, you know, we're on 2 feet, so we can run away from danger.
Yes.
So we're already have this, you know, predisposal to, well, if it's bad, I better protect myself against it.
Yeah, to fear. Fear, we respond to fear.
Right. So the more fear we send you, the better. But to circle back to your question about how much does that impact our investment decisions, I don't think right now you can ignore that the Fed has a significant impact on what the direction of the economy and the stock market is going to be. The Fed has a significant impact on what the bond market will do, because there's an inverse relationship there between rising interest rates and bonds. But it doesn't influence all bonds equally. So, and also the rising interest rate environment is not going to affect all stocks equally. You know, certain environments create a tailwind for different investments, and some create a headwind. And while we are not market timers, and we are not going to go, we're in the market, we're out of the market, we're in cash, we're in stocks, we will never do that. That is a loser's game.
Mm-hmm.
We will lean into certain areas of the market and lean away from others based upon what the economic forecast looks like. So think about things like consumer-sensitive investments and consumer-defensive investments. Defensive investments would be things like, even if it gets bad and you're sick, you're going to give up your health care last. If things are bad and you don't have a lot of money, you're going to give up toilet paper long after you've already given up your Netflix subscription,
mm-hmm.
right? Or your priorities are really askew. So are certain investments, quote unquote, safer than others? Absolutely. If you know that there's, you know, a huge change like green energy, right? There is no question, nobody would argue right now that the initiative in the federal government is electric vehicles. Whether you like it or you hate it, I don't care. That is the big push.
Yep.
So how can you make money investing knowing that? We pay a lot of attention to that.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And the danger in not being proactive, in not evaluating things as they happen, Josh, we're seeing that play out with the Federal Reserve, where they're now trying to get their arms around rising inflation, and their one attack mechanism is to raise interest rates. And they are taking a lot of criticism from a lot of financial people that you guys were telling us that rising prices was a normal occurrence out of the pandemic, that inflation was not a fear, nobody had to worry about it. And okay, they're, you know, experts at the Fed and all that, but when you're an investor and you make a mistake like that in not evaluating things, not seeing trouble coming before the trouble's actually on your doorstep, that can have a dramatic impact on your retirement savings. And those are the things that I know that you and the Aptus team are really, really dedicated to keeping away from your client's doorstep.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that the numbers don't lie, but politicians always will, right? So what we hear on the 24-hour news cycle is going to pump us full of that fear and greed. And if we base our economic decisions or our financial decisions based upon the emotions that we receive off of that, you're destined for doom. And we've talked many times on previous shows about how they know that, and they will use that to your advantage to sell whatever widget they're trying to sell you, whether it's gold or food for your basement or whatever it might be. But the reality is, price to earnings ratios in a company matter. How much am I buying this stock for? And I'm not talking about it's a $200 share or $300 share, but how many multiples of what this company actually earns am I paying for this stock? What kind of patents does this particular company have that's going to build a moat around it that's going to be very difficult for another company to compete with? These are all very important things that if I told you you want to start a franchise with Jimmy John's or something like that, you would personally look into. But for whatever reason, we don't buy stocks that way. As normal individuals buy stocks based upon emotion, not based upon, can I actually make money off of this thing? So you need to have somebody sometimes that's a barometer of logic that says, not only do I think you shouldn't do that, but I think that maybe we should learn how we should be doing it, and then we can be a cohesive team to make the right decision.
Yeah, and that's what again, I found to be so true of Josh and his team's approach. And we talk about a lot of concepts here. We talk about a lot of different investment avenues. We talk about annuities and life insurance. And we talk about bonds and treasuries and stocks and index funds and funds that, you know, give you some of the upside of a market and mitigate some of the downside of the market. They're not enslaved to one particular strategy. They are dedicated as fiduciaries doing what is the best for you, legally obligated doing what is best for you. Set up your consultation, 614-917-1040, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management, and we're happy to have you with us. We will be talking about market conditions, volatility, growing your money, growing that nest egg so that you arrive at retirement or financial independence or whatever term you want to place on it in a better position. A fiduciary, that's what Josh is legally required to do what's best for you. But Josh, as we transition into this, and before we do, I should remind people you can get a free consultation, a free meeting with the Aptus team, no obligation, by calling 614-917-1040, setting up that appointment via the phone, or you can set up your appointment by making your appointment online. aptuswealth.com, APTUS, aptuswealth.com is their web address. They're located physically in Lewis Center, right off Route 750, just a bit north of 270 and 23. We started this segment with the obligatory, I forget, what do they call it? The, you know, all the different things you have to say, all the things you're legally obligated, the disclaimer, sorry.
Right.
And you're listed as a state registered investment advisory firm. I've just said you are a fiduciary. Is a fiduciary the same thing as a financial advisor, financial planner? Are these synonymous terms, different, small differences? Let's just make clear, like, exactly what you are and what people should be looking for, what they can expect out of someone in that role.
Sure. So the term financial advisor is really kind of a generic term that just says that this is somebody who gives financial advice and has some sort of licensure. I mean, it's almost just a make-believe term. Mm-hmm. The term financial planner was originally coined by somebody who was a certified financial planner, which is a level of schooling, right?
Right.
And then you'll hear financial consultant, or, you know, the list goes on and whatever, you know, wealth advisor.
Investment advisor.
Investment advisor. Okay.
Yeah.
So the only ones that really, no matter what you're called, you fall into one of two camps.
Okay.
Camp number one, you get paid commissions for the products that you sell. Now, unfortunately for the consumer, you can be called a financial advisor here. Okay. And you can also be called a financial advisor if you're a fee-based only advisor, which means you don't get paid commissions, you get paid a flat fee. And we'll talk about the pros and cons of both of these. So there were brokers, they've been around since the beginning of time. I'm not, you know, begrudging them in any way, but they get paid a commission, and then investment advisors get paid a fee. So investment advisors, you'll hear oftentimes called either investment advisor or fiduciary. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that they are legally obligated to do what's in your best interests, and they cannot be paid a disproportionate commission for any one product versus the other. So in that camp, essentially, let's just say for argument's sake, you're making 1% on clients' assets that you manage. The only way you're going to make more money on that client is if their account balance grows.
Yeah.
Because 1% of a million is more than 1% of 100,000.
Sure.
On the other side, if you're getting paid commissions, you might say, well, you line up perfectly for an annuity contract. And this annuity contract pays 7% commission and this one pays 5%. Well, they're both annuity contracts. They're both of the category that you want. They're both suitable for you. So I can pick whichever one I want. Now, one might be better for you than the other and one better for me than the other. And you can do that as a broker. Again, not saying all of them do, but at least you could. Now, unfortunately, again, coming back to the consumer, it's kind of up to you to ask the questions, because I can call myself basically anything mm-hmm. and operate under either condition.
Yeah, so that opens up a couple questions that I have. I mean, my perception always has been that a broker is somebody who in the old days could buy things for you that you couldn't buy on your own. But we're now in a different world where you can manage your own, basically be your own stockbroker. Or you used to be able, you know, to do that. I dabbled around in that for a while and did pretty well for a while. And then 2008 happened and I'm like, I probably shouldn't do this anymore. But I would assume, I'm just guessing, that the law would require someone to make clear if they were going to have the freedom to put people in an investment that paid the financial person more, are they required to disclose that upfront to a client?
In short, no.
Oh, wow.
So the real differentiator, and again, not picking on the broker side of things, it's just the way they're regulated. But if you look at the fiduciary side or the investment advisor side, the side that we operate on, transparency is the big differentiator. So for example, let's use the annuity example again. If it was determined that the best investment product for you is an annuity contract, annuity companies or insurance companies are still stuck somewhere back around the early 1900s, right? They just haven't hopped on the fiduciary train yet. So I will have to disclose to you the exact amount of money that I make on that annuity contract. Whatever you're paying in the way of total fees for the management on our side, we have to disclose to you. So if you've ever watched those commercials where they say, you know, do you know what hidden fees you're paying? Do you know? That cannot happen on our side. We have to share with you every nickel that you are spending. So you will know.
Okay. So that's Cliff's Notes version of the different terms that you hear thrown out for financial advisors. My wife and I are Aptus clients, and we became Aptus clients after meeting with Josh and his team for the free consultation. A lot of you were doing what we were doing, which is managing your own investments. I just was getting close enough to retirement that it made me nervous that we'd make a big mistake. So I like the fact that somebody else who has done this for a long time, has been successful at it for a long time, would be on my behalf, acting in my best interest. You can set up your free consultation by calling Aptus, 614-917-1040. You can also make an appointment via their website, AptusWealth, A-P-T-U-S, AptusWealth.com. So as we are in this volatile time, interest rates are going up, banks, are they solid, are they not solid? Everybody has an opinion on that. You are, I would assume, in your daily course of work, evaluating market conditions and trying to figure out, okay, we may have been in a certain category that's been good to my clients for a while. I see market conditions shifting to where maybe a different category of investment might become better. Is that done more in a general way as to you're looking at annuities versus stocks versus bonds? Or are you looking at sectors, say, of the stock market and saying, okay, interest rates are going up, the Fed's making it harder to borrow money, I'm assuming that will mean, and again, I'm just trying to think like a scenario you might be in. I'm just looking at that going, okay, since interest rates are going up, new home construction will be going down. So I'm not going to be too optimistic about lumber, too optimistic about sectors of a market that might go with a category, home building, that I expect to not be as good as it's been in the past.
Yeah, all of the above. So, you know, the initial step in constructing a portfolio for anybody would be, you know, where are they in the area of risk tolerance? Step one. Mm-hmm. So let's just use very generic terms and say we're going to do a 50-50 portfolio, meaning we need 50% in fixed income and 50% in equities to some capacity. Well, then there's two sides of the coin right there. So on one side, we have equities, meaning stocks. Where should we be in the stock market? How much do we want to hedge risk against, meaning we can put stop losses on? How much in energy versus telecommunications do you want? And I use those purposefully because if you look at 2022, you know, the S&P 500 has 11 sectors. So if you look at the S&P 500 and you say, well, you know, that's 500 companies in the United States, that represents 11 different sectors of the economy.
Okay.
And last year was the biggest disparity between the winning sector and the losing sector. So energy was up 66% and telecommunications was down 40%. So there's 106% difference between the winner and the loser. So to say that what sectors you're involved in doesn't matter, well, I think that very clearly illustrates that it most certainly does. So then, you know, you pick what sectors are we going to be in, what size of stocks are going to be in, because there's big stocks, small stocks, et cetera. International stocks, for example, right now, so think Europe, actually look more appealing than U.S. stocks just because of their valuations. So you'll see in our portfolios, for example, our exposure to international stocks has gone up a little bit. Value stocks look a little bit more appealing versus growth stocks. So think value stocks are the Coca-Cola, Costco, Home Depot, and growth stocks are the Tesla, Amazon, et cetera, mm-hmm. right? So you're doing all of that, but then you look forward to today and you say, well, what about interest rates? What should our fixed income portfolio look like? Well, if interest rates go up anymore, that could have a negative impact on long-term bonds. So we should steer clear of those. But at the same time, we can get CDs paying north of 5%. So maybe we should start looking at some diversified CD portfolio. So, I mean, the list just goes on and on, but that's forever changing. Give an example. Right now, you can take old annuity contracts, and by old, I mean just a few years old. 3 years ago, annuity contracts were paying one thing. Now they're paying 3 to 4 times that amount. Mm. And you go, yeah, but there's a penalty for me to get out. Well, companies are not stupid. They've come out with products where you can get bonuses to kind of offset some of that, and you're better off. So even though you might have bought an annuity contract that said, you got to be in this for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, it might make sense to move that right now, which 3 years ago, that wouldn't have made any sense at all. So you have to be in tune with where is the market and where are the opportunities, because as far as I'm concerned, we should be trying to make money every single day of every single year, not just crossing our fingers and hoping it all plays out.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective, because I think as I view the volatility in the market, that to me means uncertainty. And the uncertainty of it and the risk of, you know, me riding my own personal beliefs or expectations is underscored by the fact that you just said that last year the energy sector was way up. Okay, now me in my brain, I'm going, well, it seems like the Biden administration is de-incentivizing or even not flat out not allowing domestic energy production. That should hurt the energy sector. It should be down. What did I miss in that that allowed energy to be up dramatically?
Well, what did you pay for gasoline?
A lot.
You think all of that went to just, sure. Right?
Okay. I mean,
yeah, see, here's the thing. If you look at companies, and this, I made this argument maybe even on the show. If you tell oil exploration companies that just stop investing and exploring because we're not going to let you even do what you're doing in a couple of years, so don't even worry about it. Mm-hmm. And you still have X million barrels laying on the sidelines, do you think you're going to go, oh, I get it, we'll just sell this at a discount? Or are you going to jack it through the roof and go, we're going to make hay while the sun shines because I don't know how long this party's going to last?
There it is. Okay. Josh Pick, Bruce Hooley with you. It's the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. This show will air tomorrow at noon. We'd love for you to recommend it to your friends. And you can listen to Josh and me on Mondays at 12:30 on Money Monday. That's our segment on the Bruce Hooley Show on 989theanswer.com. So we've talked about before, and you just referenced, the inverted yield curve. Because interest rates have gone up, we now have the atypical, not normal situation where short-term investments have a higher yield in the bond market than long-term. And this is the kind of jackpot the banks that were struggling or failing got caught in. They had too many long-term notes, and short-term didn't have enough. People wanted their money. It caused a problem. How do you stay nimble in that regard on behalf of your clients? You can see that inflation is 6%. You've said earlier today that you think we're not done with rate hikes from the Fed. But I know that you don't just charge in and say, okay, short-term, 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 we can ride that. You have to have an expectation of how long you can be in the right pocket with market conditions favoring shorter-term investments.
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways you can insulate yourself against interest rate risk, which is really what you're talking about. And just, again, to reiterate, if you went and got a CD right now, you would get the same interest rate on a 3, 6, or 9-month CD, essentially. There's no benefit to going out longer. Matter of fact, if you said, I want a 2-year CD, they would pay you less as an interest rate than a 9-month. That is an inverted yield curve. And the reason for that is people are very uncertain. Banks in particular are very uncertain about what the future holds. So you remember, let's reference back to the earlier segment today. If you buy a long-term bond and you have to sell it early and rates are going up, that is the worst case scenario for a bondholder.
Substantial penalty for early withdrawal thing?
Yeah, yeah. So, and you say, well, I don't plan on pulling my money out early, so what's the big deal? Well, most people don't own individual bonds. They own bond funds. So what you do isn't nearly as important as what everybody that's in that fund with you does. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I would suggest you do is, if you're going to buy long-term bonds because you feel like interest rates are decent enough to justify it, don't buy a long-term bond fund. Buy long-term bonds individual. Or another way to grab that level of interest rate, if you're planning on being a long-term investor, is buy annuity contracts as opposed to bonds. Why? because you can buy annuity contracts right now that are 5, 6, 7 years long, which is no different than an intermediate term bond, that are paying 5 to 6% guaranteed. Now, what's the downside to that? Well, the downside is you can only get 10% of your money out every year until you come to the conclusion of that term. But the upside, and most people would call this a downside, is you know what your penalty is if you pull out early. So, for example, let's say that interest rates go up and 5 years into a 7 year, you know, term, you go, I need all my money. Mm-hmm. They might penalize you. You know what it is. You're going to pay a 2% penalty for getting out early, but you keep all your interest. Okay, I'm willing to take that penalty. Do you know what the penalty is for holding a long-term bond and pulling out early?
No.
There's no way you could know. No. It all depends on what happens with interest rates. So I think there's a couple ways you can do it. One, stay away from bond funds unless you're ultra short term. And number two, buy things like CDs and buy annuity contracts where you know what the rules are. They're not fluid.
So we are here now in the middle, essentially the middle of the first term of a presidential administration. We may have a second Biden administration. We may have a change to a Republican administration in 2024. We just don't know. As you're evaluating market conditions and approaching a period of time where we could have a change in presidential administrations, the perception is that the approach to economic growth will change dramatically if we have a switch in administrations. Has that historically been true, or are the challenges of escaping an inflationary period such that if there's a change in administration, it really doesn't make that much a difference, or it doesn't make a difference enough that it leaves the investor exposed to wild fluctuations?
Well, you know, if you look historically, at least, the changing of the guards of presidents in inflationary times has not really moved the needle dramatically. The Fed has more of an impact on that. Now, that said, the president and who's in, you know, Congress mm-hmm. and the House has a significant impact on what the budget looks like. And the closer we can get to some form of a balanced budget, the better, because it puts less strain on how much money we have to print, which puts more strain on inflation, which puts more strain on the Fed. I would suggest that in times like these, the things that would be concerning to me is simultaneously raising tax rates on corporations when corporations are already in a position of they're going to feel the pinch here coming up. They're absolutely going to. That could be tumultuous. Now, fortunately, and you know, I always shy away from the political talk.
Right.
But fortunately, I would say that I don't know, and I'm going to expose myself a little bit. I don't know how it could get much worse from here and the way that the current administration has been running the economic side of the House. So I think change will be good for us in this scenario.
Okay, so one of the things that the Biden administration wants to do is they do want to raise taxes on corporations. They say that they will not raise taxes on anyone making less than $400,000 a year. And again, I'm not trying to be political here. I'm trying to figure out, I think it's pretty obvious that if a corporation's costs go up, that will be passed along to the consumer in some way, shape, or form. But what we're concerned about here is investing and in growing investments. So what is the investment response, people in your profession, to the possibility, even the desired possibility from the administration's perspective, of taxing corporations more? You guys have to have a way to look at that, view that, and react accordingly on behalf of your clients.
Yeah, well, one, let me answer and say that the answer I'm going to give you is always fluid. We're always, you know, looking at economic conditions and changing things along the way. But in general, anytime you have a time period where there's what I would consider to be a tailwind, great tax rate environment, economy is very virile, everything's going well, people have money in their pocket, mm-hmm. We don't have an inflationary problem. Most companies do really well during times like that. And as a matter of fact, companies that seem to be more innovative and taking more risk have more upside potential. Think tech companies, mm-hmm. et cetera, right? Fast forward to times that are difficult and we have a headwind. Certain companies have an ability to weather that storm a lot better than others. And I'll use an example, and I'm not recommending anybody to go and buy these companies, but let's think of it, a company like Costco. Costco makes the lion's share of its money, basically all of its money, off of you buying the membership at Costco. they're not making the reason that their stuff is so inexpensive is they're making all the money off the memberships and then they're selling everything, passing it through at the equal cost. If times get difficult, would you be more inclined to buy stuff at a cheaper cost at a place like Costco, or would you be less inclined? I would say you'd be more inclined to go to a place like that.
Sure.
So is that a company that's going to weather the storm a heck of a lot better than, let's say, you know, some company that's selling high-end purses or something? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that mean that, you know, Coach or Prada or any of these other companies couldn't do well? Well, that's up to the management. But they're definitely facing more of a headwind than a tailwind. So, you know, when you face these times of economic uncertainty, there's a bunch of things that you can do. But I think the most obvious thing would be make sure you're investing in companies that can weather storms and actually profit during them. And not all companies are created equal in that capacity.
Set up your free consultation with Josh and the Aptus team so that you can understand these kinds of concepts, market conditions. Things are volatile. That's indisputable. But why are they volatile? How do they react to that? The consultation is free. 614-917-1040 is the number you call to set that up. You can make an appointment online. Their online address is AptusWealth, APTUS, AptusWealth.com. You do not need to live in Central Ohio to be an Aptus client. Josh has clients all across the country. You can confer outside the area via remote hookup, 614-917-1040, to get to know the Aptus team, to get them to know you. And I'm just guessing from our conversation then that there's two ways to be. You can be proactive. You can be reactive. I think someone in your line of work, I would tend to think that the ideal scenario is you're much more proactive than reactive, but you also have to be able to be reactive if something develops that no one could have seen coming.
Yeah, and you also want to make sure that you're not just doing things for the sake of doing them just for optics. I mean, there will be years where very limited changes occur, and that's purposeful. Sometimes the best thing to do is nothing. Sometimes the best thing to do is a lot. And in times like these, you know, I think you need to be pretty proactive and, you know, proverbially getting off the tracks if you see the train coming, right? Yeah. And I think that points to a direction of, you know, what is the role of a financial advisor and how do you judge one? How do you grade one? Now, I hear that oftentimes. I don't know if people come in and say, I'm meeting with you because I want a second, I want a second set of eyes looking at it, make sure I'm doing the right things. I don't know if my advisor's doing a good job or not. I don't know what I don't know. So here's how I think you should view that relationship and how you should judge them. So one, the role and responsibility of your advisor, in my opinion, is not just telling you what to do, but telling you what your options are to get to where you want to go, and then ultimately telling you to make the decision on what you should pick. Now, they should have a very significant influence on those choices,
sure,
because that's what you're paying them for. But ultimately, you have to take some ownership for your answers as well. And along those lines, that advisor better be able to explain to you complex situations and problems and solutions in very simplistic ways so that you understand them. One rule we have is if you don't understand it, we're not doing it. That's just a terrible scenario for both of us. So that brings me to the next question is, well, how do I grade them? Well, has he showed you something or she shown you something this year that was a strategy that could have lowered your tax rates? Yes or no? The answer is no. Well, did she tell you why there was nothing else? That should at least be uncovered every year. Two, when you look at the rates of return that you've achieved, has there been any sort of analysis done where it says this is the level of risk you took? Similar people in your situation that took similar levels of risk achieved this and you did this, and are you at least on par with that or better? Mm-hmm. If the answer is, I haven't kept up with any index forever and they just keep on saying, well, you're not taking any risk. Well, maybe they haven't even a checking account. I don't know, because that doesn't have, well, I used to say it doesn't have much risk. Maybe it's got more than it had before. That's not a good measurement. But at the same time, while you should measure performance and measure results, you can't measure results every 3 days. You got to measure results over a long period of time. And I think that that is a significant market cycle period of time, like 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that really it was eye-opening for Sherry and I when we went in for our consultation with Aptus was the options. And Josh and his team did make us aware that the decision was ours, but understanding it was really a key. So set up that consultation, 614-917-1040, aptuswealth.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.